This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We're going to talk about institutional trust. Tulsi Gabbard testified today. Jeff Clark from the Trump administration joins us. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. You ever dated somebody, or maybe even married somebody, who had been in a past relationship that wasn't so good for one reason or another? Alcoholism, abuse, one reason or another. Many people were in that situation. Maybe you're in that situation right now. Maybe that somebody's sitting beside you. Here's something that's true about that. You, as the person dating the person who had someone abuse them in the past, you are going to have to deal with the fallout from that. It's not your fault, and it's not their fault, but it is something that you are going to have to deal with because of something they went through previously. Her ex-husband was a terrible alcoholic, Last night was St. Patty's Day. You went and cracked a beer. Nothing wrong with that. She's giving you the side eye. I wish you wouldn't drink. Is there anything wrong with having a beer? No. Are her feelings on you having a beer understandable after what she's gone through? They are. We've talked many times on this show about the relationship a people have with their government. This is true in every country in the history of the world. How important the trust is. Because there is a relationship. There should be. There has to be a relationship. The people have to feel intertwined with their government. Their government has to feel intertwined with the people of a country. That is a necessary thing for a country to continue long term. And if you don't have that, a whole host of problems come with that. And I warned, and I know you were warning too, over and over and over and over again, that the endless government lies we had been told about everything underneath the sun, what it was doing was it was breaking the people away from their government, severing that trust. And what I said, and you remember this, over and over and over again, that sometime in the future, we were going to have that trust. It was going to be important that that trust was there. And now that it's gone, it's going to hurt us in ways we couldn't even see. Look, Iran's a great example right now. Trump is out there. We're involved in this operation, this war in Iran. Bombings, they're all kinds of rumors. The Marines are on the way. We don't know any of that yet. Trump says we're almost done. But it might take a while, but we don't know. Trump is out there explaining it to the American people because remember that here's our political situation here at home. The political situation here at home is the MAGA faithful, the three-time Trump voter, the hardcore Republican. They're still in Trump's camp. 87%, 92%, depends on what poll it is. They're fine with this Iran thing. But independents who decide elections are way against it, to the tune of like 70%. They hate it. So Trump is understandably out there trying to sell it, trying to justify it. Here he is.
When they say death to America, you should believe them, because that's what they would have. If they had a nuclear weapon, they would have used it. But they never had the chance. I never gave them the chance. Had we not done this, you would have had a nuclear war that would have evolved into World War III. And more important, this is a war that there would have been nothing left. It'll be wrapped up soon. We're going to have a much safer world. I had an obligation to do this. You want to see a stock market go down? Start letting them hit you with nukes, okay?
Okay. They were about to get nukes. This is about weapons of mass destruction. Now, pause for a second. I know you probably have strong feelings about Iran one way or the other. You're all about it. It's the right thing to do. We had to destroy this evil terrorist regime. It's making the world a safer place. Or you're dead set against it. We're going to get bogged down. But this is not about that. Donald Trump has said repeatedly They were about to get nukes. They were going to use nukes. They were about to get nukes. Weapons of mass destruction. Now, for the sake of argument here, maybe you're dead set against this thing, and that's fine. For the sake of argument, let's say he's being 100% honest there. And I have no reason to think Trump is lying, but let's say, just stay with me here, he's being honest there. Maybe he saw it's all written down. He saw all the paperwork. They were about to have a nuclear weapon. Let's say he's being honest there. Well, this is the problem. Even if he's being honest, men who came before him lied repeatedly, and now many Americans are jaded on that cell. I mean, I'm old enough to remember this.
And you can know that our forces will be coming home as soon as their work is done. Our nation enters this conflict reluctantly, yet our purpose is sure. The people of the United States and our friends and allies will not live at the mercy of an outlaw regime that threatens the peace with weapons of mass murder.
Then we spent 20 years in Iraq and Afghanistan. It sucks that the current administration has to deal with the spouse with trust issues now. It sucks. It does. But that is the situation we're in. And the government itself only has itself to blame for years and years and years and years of lies. This predated George Bush. The studies, all the studies show it was the Vietnam War. Right up, leading up to the Vietnam War, the American people had a great deal of trust in their government. And then Vietnam War, all the lies that came with it, it severed that trust. And since that day, the government has lied over and over and over and over again, making those trust issues deeper and deeper and deeper. And this is what I have tried to emphasize time and time again. That has to be repaired. It almost has to be priority one, or we can't stay a country. We don't believe the government anymore. And we're totally justified in feeling that way, but we don't believe the government anymore. I mean, look, speaking of trust, I remember this.
We're announcing new guidelines for every American to follow over the next 15 days as we combat the virus. Each and every one of us has a critical role to play in stopping the spread and transmission of the virus. We did this today. This was done by a lot of very talented people, some of whom are standing with me.
15 days? It's just 15 days? It's just going to be 15 days. And I want to credit Chief Nerd for putting together this montage. It went from 15 days to this.
Generally, if you have droplets that come out of a person, they generally go down within 6 feet. So if you're 6 feet distance and you're wearing a mask, you don't worry about that.
The best PPE for the general public, if possible, right now, is to maintain the physical and social distancing.
And if you cannot practice physical distancing, then are you practicing love?
Can we still go out for a walk?
Yes, you can go out for a walk. You need to stay 6 feet away from anyone else.
There's a bar in Maryland has customers in these big inner tube things on wheels. And this is supposed to enforce social distancing.
Guidelines for restaurants vary from state to state. Common rules include reductions in capacity, keeping tables 6 feet apart, limiting the number of people per group, and requiring employees to wear masks or face coverings.
This is our effort to make sure you have facts, not fear.
Tape on the floor, indicating where customers waiting to check out should stand. This is at a Target in Seminole County. Similar markers can be seen at a Seminole County Publix. That's because the county issued an executive order requiring social distancing, and businesses must comply.
The greatest risk is moving within 6 feet of someone's space. The mayor emphasized awareness of enforcement. Violate social distancing, and you could invite shutdown and criminal charges.
I've got trust issues. You have trust issues. The American people have trust issues, and we're justified. And I remember all the smartest people in our society running to the television cameras to tell us about the vaccine.
But you don't have a choice. People act like you have a choice. People don't feel like going to the stadium when they might get infected. You know, it's not the government who's saying, okay, just ignore this disease. And, you know, people are deeply affected by seeing these deaths, by knowing they could be part of the transmission chain, and, you know, old people, their parents, their grandparents could be affected by this. And so you don't, you know, you don't get to say ignore what's going on here. There will be the ability, particularly in rich countries, to open up if things are done well over the next few months. But for the world at large, normalcy only returns when we've largely vaccinated the entire global population. And so...
Yeah, a study came out this morning. They studied over 1 million children and found the only children who had this myocarditis were children who got the vaccine. The unvaccinated children had no cases whatsoever. The government lied to you about 15 days. They lied to you about social distancing. They lied to you about the vaccine. They lied and lied and lied and then told more lies to cover up their lies. And then when you didn't believe their lies, the American president went on camera and told you he was losing patience with you.
For unvaccinated, we are looking at a winter of severe illness and death for unvaccinated. For themselves, their families, and the hospital, they'll soon overwhelm. But there's good news. If you're vaccinated, you have your booster shot, you're protected from severe illness and death.
Over 200 million Americans have gotten at least one shot. We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin. And your refusal has cost all of us.
And now, here we are. It's St. Paddy's Day. That was yesterday. You want to have a beer? Do you feel justified in having a beer? St. Paddy's Day, after all. But your wife was married to an abusive alcoholic before. She's got trust issues now. This is where we are, and we have to acknowledge where we are. We have to figure out a way to work through it. This goes way beyond COVID or Iran or anything else. This is going to come up again and again and again and again and again. The government is going to want us to know something or going to want us to believe something, and we just don't anymore. It's a problem. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Somebody I do trust is Harmeet Dhillon inside the Justice Department. What is happening inside the Justice Department? Good things? I'm hearing some good things. We'll talk to Harmeet about that. Before we talk to Harmeet, how'd you sleep last night? Hopefully you stuck with one beer. You know what I had on St. Paddy's Day? I had hot chocolate. It's the work week, okay? I'm old, and my hot chocolate was Dream Powder from Beam. Had all kinds of natural things in it. A little cup of hot chocolate. I at least took it late, 10 o'clock last night, sipped on it. Gone. Reishi and magnesium and melatonin, all kinds of things. I just went and slept like a little bitty tiny baby. You want to sleep like that every single night? Have yourself some hot chocolate. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
It allows ICE to kick tens of billions of people off the rolls, and they don't tell them until election day, and you show up and you say, you're not registered anymore, you're not registered here, you're not on the rolls.
Well, let's assume Chuck Schumer misspoke with the whole billions thing, but millions and billions can get confusing. I'm an idiot anyway, but... Why would the SAVE Act kick people off the voter rolls? Joining me now, Harmeet Dhillon, U.S. Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights. Hey, Harmeet, maybe you can clear this up because you're one of these smart people. Why would the SAVE Act kick anybody off the voter rolls? I don't understand.
Well, you could be kicked off the voter rolls if you're not a citizen or you're otherwise ineligible to vote, which is actually the law, and that's what we want. But otherwise, American citizens should have, who are alive and who aren't registered in multiple jurisdictions should have no concern about this. This would allow them to vote as before. So that's just hysteria being worked up by the Democrats, who I think they want loosey-goosey voter rolls. They have them, particularly in blue states. Our review here at the DOJ in less than a year in office of reviewing close to 60 million voter records through our federal databases has shown that there are over 330,000 dead people on the voter rolls, and those are in the better states, frankly, the ones who are cooperating with us. And we've referred over 20,000 voter records that are potentially non-citizens for further checking with other databases. And if any of those people who got on the rolls who are not citizens voted, then those would be referred for criminal prosecution as well.
Okay, so the states that are cooperating with you, which I'll just go ahead and assume those are mostly red states, you've already discovered 300,000 dead people on the voter rolls, which of course begs the question, there are states that aren't cooperating with you. Who are those states, and why wouldn't they cooperate?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're suing 29 states and the District of Columbia, and the last wave of states that I sued include four majority Republican states: West Virginia, Kentucky, Utah, and Oklahoma. And so, you know, when you dig in, the kind of excuses that I've found include, well, our state laws have some privacy requirements, even though many of these states are sharing their databases under agreements with ERIC and other liberal groups. Some states, like Washington State, which we're suing, had hacks many years ago into their drivers and voting databases and didn't tell the public about them. So scam artists out there have this information, but they won't give it to the federal government. Some of them claim that Social Security information, which we need to do accurate checking, is somehow private, even though the United States government issues that information. And then, frankly, it's like, Jesse, when your wife probably, when people come over to the house or even the cleaning person, you kind of tidy up beforehand. So now that somebody's looking, they're trying to buy extra time and tidy up before we look at the voter rolls and how sloppy they are. I mean, that's the reality. And it's unfortunate because we're entitled to this data and we're just trying to help states do their job under federal law. And what we're finding is not comforting. So this needs to be done, and then it needs to be done regularly going forward.
Ken, and by the way, my wife does that. She keeps the house clean, but the second someone comes to visit, it's like a 5-alarm fire where everybody has to buckle down and clean an already clean house. But that's another story entirely.
That's familiar.
I have no doubt about it. Can you help me understand, can the federal government under the Trump administration, can the federal government clean these voter rolls up, or does this, are you just on an informational hunt and we're banking on scumbag communist states to clean up their own voter rolls?
Well, they have a duty to clean it up under the Help America Vote Act, but they don't. This is a widespread problem, and it isn't just a blue state problem. I mean, but in a blue state like California, there's zero impetus to do it. In fact, California kept getting waivers from the federal government for its data obligations. It's a complete mess over there. And in 2017, Los Angeles County settled a case from Judicial Watch where they admitted they had over 1 million people on the voter rolls in that county who did not belong there because they were dead, they had moved, or they're otherwise ineligible. So this is a big problem, but it's a problem in Texas. It's a problem in other jurisdictions. Many jurisdictions are complying with us on a county-by-county basis. For example, various counties in Florida have voluntarily uploaded their databases and are getting back the results. I'm counting those in the ones that I just told you. So this is a huge problem. And in the past, the federal government used to charge states for accessing our federal databases, which is silly. The president has lifted that requirement. We're here to help. And we are helping. And I hope that this project is completed in time for the midterm so that when people go to the polls, regardless of their party and regardless of their state, they can feel comfortable in the outcome of the election.
Army, there's something that is a source of frustration for, I think, everybody who watches my show, and that's the judges. Every day it seems like it's two steps forward, one step back. The Trump administration tries to do something, and then there's some idiot judge somewhere, somehow, who puts a stop to it, even if it's temporarily. Everybody knows the name Boasberg by now, and nobody should know the name Boasberg. But can we stop that, or is that just the system we live under, and that's kind of how it's going to be?
Well, here are the ways you can stop that. First of all, the president needs the support from the Senate to confirm his nominees. And there's this archaic concept called the blue slip process, which is from the bygone days when Republicans and Democrats used to cooperate with each other. But now you basically can have one Democrat in a state have a veto over that process. And so, you know, that's really slows down the process of filling up the district court bench. And then there's an impeachment process, which is the only way to remove a life tenure judge. And I just don't think we have the numbers or the will in Congress to accomplish that. There have been judges out there, we've seen them in the headlines, I know you're referring to them, who literally, you know, a day or two after a court of appeals slaps them down quite aggressively for blatantly violating the Constitution or federal law, they go and do it again. There's no punishment for them for doing it. And so laws need to be changed, but for laws to be changed, a party needs to have a majority, and then also not be playing patty cakes in some ancient rituals and just dealing with the modern realities of how people vote today and understanding that when the left is in charge, they do it a certain way, and the right is kind of playing with one hand tied behind its back. And so that's just my political analysis. I'm not saying that as a DOJ official, but that is the problem that we're facing. But I will tell you, as a DOJ official and just as a lawyer who goes into court, when I was a young lawyer, you did not necessarily assume that knowing who the person was who nominated the judge would tell you what the outcome was going to be. That's increasingly the case today, and that's really unfortunate because all litigants are entitled to a fair shake from federal judges. They should be calling balls and strikes, not weaponizing a political agenda. But in the last couple of Democrat administrations, they were able to pack the district courts, the trial courts, with their judges, and we don't get the same courtesy on our side. So there is a disproportionate disarmament here that needs to be fixed.
We have a foreign worker problem, Harmeet. Americans training their foreign replacements only to be fired. It's happening on such a regular basis. I know there are lawsuits out there. It's a problem, but is it illegal? Is it just something I have to pull what's left of my hair out over? Or is there something we can do about this? Because that's not a thing that should happen.
Well, first of all, the good news is there is something that we can do about it. And secondly, the other good news is this DOJ is doing something about it. I have a whole team dedicated to identifying discrimination against American workers, which is a form of national origin discrimination. We are working together beyond that project with the Labor Department and the EEOC on this nationality issue, and with the Labor Department specifically on the abuse of H-1B and other types of worker visas. And so every time we find an example of a company, and you know, particularly a bigger company, that is preferring or advertising for jobs that are open only to H-1B workers, which means workers who they can exploit and pay less to and also take the jobs of Americans, so there's a number of things wrong with that, we're going after them. And we've reached several settlements. And just recently we reached a settlement against a Virginia IT recruiting company that had told us their excuse for posting a job that was H-1B only advertised was that it had been generated by AI. So that's a little scary because the AI kind of trained itself to go for H-1B. They know they can probably get more applicants there. They can pay them less. And so they corrected that, but Congress could do us a favor by increasing the penalties, because right now the penalty per violation for that particular issue is less than $5,000 per violation. So why not go and get the maximum penalty for placing a couple of ads that are blatantly illegal and discriminate against American workers? It's barely a bump in the road for them. And frankly, it may be worth it to many companies to violate those laws. And so we need to fix that.
Yeah, we do. Harmeet, stay in the fight. I appreciate you very much. All right. Foreign involvement in our elections, government weaponization. There's more we need to get to in a moment before we get to that. Speaking of hiring American workers, do you have Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile? When's the last time you had to make a call to customer service? Was that an American talking to you on the other end? No, I know it wasn't. I know it wasn't. I'm so frustrated with that now. There's no reason these companies can't hire Americans, but they don't. They go farm it out to some foreigner who can hardly speak English, and it drives me up the wall. Look, I love that Pure Talk saves me money. I do. But I think I love that they hire Americans more than anything else. When you get a hold of somebody at Pure Talk, it's an American right here at home who speaks English. And they're pleasant. An American? An English-speaking American who's nice? It's almost disconcerting. Switch. Save money on your cell plan. Hire the company that hires Americans. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Okay. Let's talk about this really briefly here. Foreign involvement in our elections. What does that mean? Who is actually getting involved in our elections and to what end? Tulsi Gabbard had to testify today. Here's how that went.
Are you saying there is no foreign threat to our elections in the midterms this year?
As I stated in the outset of my remarks, this year's annual threat assessment matches the prioritization of threats and
Please answer the question, yes or no. Is there foreign threat interference to our elections this year?
Laid out.
Are there foreign...
Please allow me to answer the question, sir. The intelligence community has been and continues to remain focused on any collection and intelligence products show a potential foreign threat for those who are
So far, there has been none then because you've made no report.
System.
Excuse me, ma'am. If you want to ask the questions, you should have stayed in Congress. Please answer the questions.
I didn't ask you a question, sir. I'm trying to answer your questions.
So you're saying...
Why is he talking over? What's he doing? Well, Democrats have a plan. They've rolled it out time and time again. The plan is to act like Russia is getting involved to elect Republicans. They've used this on Trump. They use it over and over and over again. But here's the ugly truth of the matter. Russia isn't that involved. China, however, we know, is quite involved, trying to hack our voter rolls, trying to get driver's licenses, and they're involved to elect Democrats. It's kind of a big problem. And it's a problem that is sadly secondary to this problem, the deep state problem. We have communists inside the federal government, inside critically important federal agencies that are still working day and night to subvert the will of the American people. They believe they are God. They believe they are the ones who should run things. I want you to listen to this from Dr. Barry A. Zuloff, a member of the Senior National Intelligence Service. What level of deep state are we still dealing with in this country? Listen to this.
One analyst who was looking at Chinese interference said to me, this is almost a direct quote, I don't want my analysis going to the White House where that vulgarian, ill-mannered man, if anyone doesn't know the words, in the White House will use it to pursue policies toward China with which I personally disagree.
We have a war at home. We can't ever lose sight of that. The real war is right here at home. We have a federal government that is still full of communist subversives working day and night to kneecap what you want, what I want, what we voted for in November. And that is a fight we must win. It's the most important thing in the world going on right now. The enemy here at home has to be stopped. All right? We have so much more. We also have to tell you about your energy levels, your mind. Do you want to have a clear mind? Doesn't it feel like your mind's kind of foggy now as you get older? I've forgotten. Senior moment. You ever said that? You just need some natural herbal supplements from Chalk. I am such a believer. I never used to take any supplements at all, and then I got with Chalk. Started taking a male vitality stack. And man, I just felt myself getting so much sharper at work. I just felt like my mind, I describe it like a fog just clearing out of your mind. And you're thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, I can't believe I used to live the other way. Your energy is going to be good. Your mood's going to be good. Your mind is going to work well. But you can't do that without a subscription to Chalk. Get some natural herbal supplements, a male vitality stack or a female vitality stack, whatever. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. You know, we talk a lot about the evils of the Biden administration and the way they use the power of government against their political opponents, like all communists do. But it's one thing for me to sit here and tell you about it and for us to point to, you know, a news story here and audio there. It's another thing to actually talk to somebody who felt the weight of the government, probably still feels it coming down on his head. And Jeff Clark is most definitely one of those people. I have a ton of respect for Jeff. He is the vice president of litigation at the Oversight Project. Jeff, before we get into the other goings-ons, will you please remind people what the Biden administration did to you?
Sure. Well, look, I'm entering the sixth year of the lawfare, barfare effort against me by the D.C. Bar. The investigation started in 2021. It's still going on. My case has now reached the D.C. Court of Appeals, which is the highest local home rule court in D.C., and they've been sitting on some motions exchanges, essentially some briefing for several months now. So, you know, they're still threatening to take my license. And, you know, they launched Jack Smith at me. He made me unindicted co-conspirator number four in the criminal indictment in D.C. against President Trump. I got dropped out of that after the Supreme Court issued the immunity decision in a superseding indictment in the fall of 2024. So that was good. That was the first, you know, kind of domino lined up against me to get knocked over and off to the side. And then more recently, Fannie Willis's case in Georgia fell apart. That indictment was dismissed against all of the defendants because Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade were disqualified. And now we're trying to recover our fees from that ridiculous RICO, state RICO conspiracy case. Fannie Willis is laying down in the tracks to try to stop that from moving faster. So at the moment, you know, of the three things they lined up against me, and I'm not even counting the January 6th committee, you know, the Jack Smith issues, the Fannie Willis issues in the D.C. bar, the only one that's still alive and sadly is still alive is the D.C. bar attack on me, Jesse.
Jeff, what is this mortal sin you committed to warrant so much government intrusion into your life?
Well, the theory in the Fannie Willis case and in the Barr case are essentially the same. They use some different legal terminology to account for the difference between state criminal law in Georgia and ethics law. But the label in the D.C. Barr was that I made an attempted false statement. And the claim in the Fannie Willis case was that I made an attempted false writing because I drafted a letter. And I recommended that letter be adopted by the Justice Department to go out to state legislators in Georgia, urging them to call themselves into special session under their authority in Article 2 of the Constitution, given directly to state legislatures, and to take another look at the 2020 election, because especially all the irregularities that happened in Fulton County. And look, the very thing that I recommended essentially is now underway by this Justice Department, and that's why they've seized the ballots in Fulton County, Georgia. I mean, it's, you know, how many years now is it since the 2020 election, right? We're like 5.5, and we still haven't seen those ballots, you know. So, all I was doing was recommending that the election in Fulton County, which was highly suspicious statistically, in terms of eyewitness testimony, that ballots were coming in by mail, that weren't creased, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All those things are now being investigated by the Justice Department. And so I don't understand how it could possibly be unethical to recommend doing the very thing that the current Justice Department is doing.
This Arctic Frost investigation was unethical, to put it mildly, but was it criminal? And I asked this completely loaded question, Jeff, because I want to see people go to prison for what they did to you and others. But I don't want to sell people a bill of goods either. Is that realistic?
Well, I think you know, I think that's two things, right? One is the question of, will it actually happen at the end of the day? But the first question is, could it happen? And I believe it could happen. I do believe that these people conspired for completely illegitimate purposes to try to attack and take off the board important allies of President Trump, like myself, like John Eastman, like Mark Meadows, and Scott Perry, a congressman from Pennsylvania. And, you know, they did that because of our political views. They discriminated against us because of our political views. They conspired to try to injure us however they can in crazy lawfare efforts. And I do think that that could be charged. And I hope that eventually it will be fully investigated. We see, obviously, Senators Grassley and Johnson probing more and more into the documents, getting more and more documents out of the FBI. And I applaud Kash Patel for allowing those documents to get out. And, you know, it's entirely possible that 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 whole situation could be prosecuted. And, you know, I don't want to oversell your viewers, like, will it actually happen? You know, that's going to be a decision for the political leadership of the Justice Department. So I won't jump ahead of them on that. But I think they could do it if they wanted to. And in my view, my public recommendation is that they should.
What's the Office of Management and Budget? You were just there. Most people don't understand what this office does. It really has an incredibly critical role if you get the right people in there. What was it? What does it do? What were you doing?
Sure. So the Office of Management and Budget, Jesse, is an agency that sits as part of the cabinet. You would have seen Russ Vogt, my former boss at both the Center for Renewing America and boss at the Office of Management and Budget in the cabinet meetings for President Trump. And OMB really, I think of it as having a three-legged stool. The main focus is on the budget, trying to get control over federal spending, trying to reorient the budget to, comport with President Trump's spending priorities in terms of what goes over to Congress for them to work on using their power of the purse. Second leg of the stool is the management leg. You know, that's the M in OMB. So, you know, there's oversight over contracts, there's oversight over grants, there's oversight over, personnel programs. There's a lot of power in that, the management of the executive branch. OMB is physically located in the, used to be called the old executive office building, now the Eisenhower Executive Office Building, the giant office building right across West Executive Avenue from the White House and from the West Wing. And then the third leg of the stool is the one that I worked on, which is overseeing all of the regulations, the massive number of regulations that come out from the executive branch. That is done by a subcomponent of OMB called the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. And before President Trump came in, all of the so-called independent agencies, we're talking about things like the FCC, the FTC, the SEC, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, those regulations used to not be reviewed by OMB. But President Trump issued an executive order and said, I want all those to be reviewed by OMB as well. So the expansion in the powers of OMB under President Trump, they've grown even farther. And Jesse, as I'm sure you know, right, we have too many federal statutes. They occupy bookshelves and bookshelves. But if you look at the Code of Federal Regulations, that occupies still more bookshelves upon bookshelves. There are more regulations than there are statutes, because the statutes, it's kind of like a launch pad for more regulations. There's more law than you can shake a stick at. There's too much of it. There needs to be massive deregulation. And President Trump did a great job deregulating in the 45 term. But now in the 47 term, you know, I was there for the first year. I just left on March 4th. We accomplished record deregulation, especially in the first year of the administration. So President Trump tasked us, Jesse, with deregulating to regulating at the ratio of at least 10 to 1. And I'm pleased to report to you that for fiscal year 2025, the ratio we actually achieved was 129-1. So we took down 129 regulations that were on the books for every new one that the Trump administration put on the books. And then in dollar terms, the amount of money is in the hundreds of billions, and it's more by a whole order of magnitude than what was done in the second year of Trump 45. So even in the first year, which isn't a complete year, right, because you don't start until January 20th, we still achieved, you know, almost 10 times, I'll call it 9 times as much deregulation in terms of lifting dollar burdens, which are a hidden tax on the American people, in President Trump's first year in office. So it's truly historic. There's a lot more work to be done, as I said to Russ Vogt in my resignation letter before I started at the Oversight Project. So thanks for having me on just yesterday. I can't wait to see what Russ is going to accomplish using OIRA, the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, in the last 3 years of President Trump's term.
Tell me about this Oversight Project, Jeff. I know that you're not exactly somebody who's ever going to sit out the fight. I'm sure you're involved in something. What is it?
Well, I just started yesterday, so you got to give me some time to get really ramped up. I've been meeting the team. I've been very impressed with the number of cases that they have underway and their plans. I can tell you that as a priority, I really want to go on offense against this lawfare effort that was directed at MAGA and at President Trump and President Trump adjacent figures, whether lawyers or non-lawyers, and there's plenty of both of those to go around. I want to go after the particularly virulent form of lawfare called barfare, which I was describing to you in terms of my own personal experience. We have a major effort underway to try to re-energize the effort to deport all of the illegal aliens that were allowed to pour over the border in an invasion of our country, frankly. And that's something I've written about before in other capacities. And, we're also going to stake out fights on the regulatory front. So I know we're working on something related to the bogus issue of climate change. We have, the left trying to stack the world of climate change litigation by having the Federal Judicial Center put out a kind of rundown for federal judges of climate change science and related legal issues. It's completely biased. It is designed just to try to get judges to greenlight climate change lawsuits so we get more and more regulation. And those, bookshelves upon bookshelves I described to you of regulations grow even bigger. And look, reducing tax burdens is tremendous, and that's very visible for people, especially as we close on tax return time here. But, the regulatory burden on the average consumer and citizen in the United States is huge, and you don't get a bill for that at the end of the year. It's all just hidden in costs, and it's hidden in economic growth that's robbed from the American people, Jesse. And so, I think we're also going to try to help get out the word about how large that federal regulatory tax is. It's a target-rich environment, Jesse. We have a lot to go after, and we're a young organization, and we are going to, hit those efforts and several others that, I'm sure I'll get to describe for you in future appearances.
Sadly, you have a lot of work to do, Jeff, so I'll let you go to it. I appreciate your brother. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And Joe Biden, I don't miss the Joe Biden era. And I know you don't miss the Joe Biden era. I'm so grateful that that is behind us. But Joe Biden and Democrat communist efforts to pretend he was normal and functional did give us some incredible laughs. Remember when there were all kinds of calls that, hey, his mind isn't working right, and the Biden administration got so concerned about the public outcry over this that they decided to trot out Joe Biden and they were going to have him speak on it once and for all and put those things to rest. And here's how that went.
I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she was not qualified to be president. So let's start there.
He did give us some gems. I'll see you tomorrow.